Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. When the CW opens its first season under new majority owner Nexstar this fall, superheroes and vampire sagas will be on the outs, theme nights and expanded sports weekend afternoons very in. Brad Schwartz, the CW's president of programming, will be next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, breaking down the actors and writers' strikes with your input, our classic trivia question, and where TV and this program goes from here. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenter of more than 35 podcast destinations, including the iHeart Podcast Network and the Zencaster Creator Network. This just in, we're going from year 16 to year 17. It's our anniversary day, and tomorrow will be televised. Wherever you may be, thank you for joining us as we start the 17th year of the program All About TV's current and future. 78 degrees, very hazy skies here in the Big Apple at the top of the hour. We're delighted to have you with us, whether you're catching us across the country or around the globe. We have a wonderful leadoff guest for our first episode of year 17, and we invite you to be part of the program. As always, it's very simple. Pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room business, and we already have somebody in the room, our very good super fan from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, already in the house. The room is Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. And while the program is on the air, as always, you are invited to connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions, and other people will be live with you. We will have Brad Schwartz, the CW's president of programming, joining us live from beautiful downtown Burbank, California, after these news notes. Academy Award-winning and Emmy-nominated director William Friedkin passed away earlier today in Los Angeles. The cause of death was not released. Friedkin earned his Oscar win in 1971 for directing The French Connection, a gritty police drama produced here in New York, starring Gene Hackman, featuring one of the great car chases of all time. He picked up an Oscar nomination 2 years later for the controversial blockbuster The Exorcist. Friedkin launched his TV output in the 1960s with documentaries for David Wooper and an episode of the Alfred Hitchcock Hour in 1960. Lear directed episodes of Tales of the Crypt, CSI, and the first Twilight Zone series revival. And he won his Emmy nomination for a remake of the 1950s television play and film 12 Angry Men on Showtime, teaming Jack Lemmon with George C. Scott. Friedkin's final movie, a remake of The Caine Mutiny starring Kiefer Sutherland, will premiere in a few weeks during the Venice Film Festival. William Friedkin was 87. Now quickies. Season 1 episodes of Peacock comedy series Killing It will run on USA Network tonight after Monday Night Raw. The Craig Robinson starring series opens Season 2 on Peacock August 17th. Next Sunday's edition of CNN News Magazine, The Whole Truth, hosted by Anderson Cooper, features a report on the restaurant industry post-pandemic, produced and reported by Food Network personality Bobby Flay. It's a rare undertaking for Flay, who has one of his eateries shutter for good during the coronavirus outbreak in the United States. Ex-CNN chief Jeff Zucker will invest in new nonfiction content maker Ever Wonder. Zucker will make the investment through his recently formed enterprise, Redbird IMI. And Winning Time's second season is off and running. HBO put out the season debut last night to solid reviews from critics nationwide, 90% score on Rotten Tomatoes, and Max begins its run of the basketball drama today. And that is news notes for today. We are delighted to have open our 17th year, someone we've had on the program before a very long time ago. At that time, he was the president of Pop TV, the service on linear cable television that got one day at a time back from the Netflix grave, and also brought a little comedy called Bleach Creek, which later won an Emmy Award for Best Comedy Series, as well as the Golden Globe Award as well. He is now the president of programming at the CW. We are delighted to welcome to the program, live from Burbank, California, Brad Schwartz. Brad, welcome in.
Hello, Simon. Thanks so much for having me. 17, so one more year till you go off to college.
Oh, yes, if American University will have me down in Washington, D.C., they go for it.
There you go. You're getting ready to leave the house, getting ready to turn 18, go off to college. You're almost all grown up.
Oh, yes, all that. And speaking of the CW, it looks like since you and Dennis Miller, the president of the network, who, by the way, just got earlier today a contract extension from Nexstar, the new majority owner, it looks like the CW is growing up starting, really starting this summer, but in big time this fall. In the past, both of you have mentioned this as a network that is now trying to get bigger and broader. How do you define that?
We are now in the hands of broadcasters. The previous CW were in the hands of two content studios, right? CBS Studios and Warner Brothers, and they would make wonderful content, and they would put it on the CW, and then they would sell it in second windows and sell it internationally, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of that content was very young adult focused, and a lot of great IP and a lot of great YA titles. But it was certainly focusing on just one, segment of the audience. And in linear television and in broadcast television these days, it just wasn't working as well as maybe one day it used to. So now, being owned by Nexstar, which is the gold standard company, the biggest broadcaster in the country, they certainly know broadcasting, they know local station business. They have there are Nexstar stations that are CBS stations and NBC stations and Fox and ABC and everyone. They know the business. They know what works in broadcast. And as broadcasters, there's only five of us. It is unduplicatable shelf space. It is an unduplicatable asset. There's only five English-speaking major broadcast networks. We're one of those five. And if you're going to operate as a broadcaster, you need to find content that's going to bring more people to you. And so as opposed to focusing in the past, maybe just on a young adult or a segment of the audience, when we say bigger and broader, we want to go out there and compete with the other broadcast networks. And that means putting content on the air that can attract much, much larger and broader audiences.
And yet you're doing it in a theme night approach, let's say comedies or sitcoms on Monday night in that two-hour block, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time, so forth. Another night is reality shows. Another night is this kind of television. How did you decide on that approach as opposed to more of a catch-as-catch-can?
Yeah. Look, this game in many ways is all about audience expectation. People need to know what to expect from you and to build viewing habits around you. Those are the hardest things in our industry to do, but they are the goal of what you try to do. And so in kind of launching a network that really has nothing but brand new titles that people have never heard of before, you want to try and build some audience expectations that they know. Oh, yeah, Monday nights I go to the CW because they've got comedy. Wednesday nights I go to the CW because they have that Sullivan's Crossing show I like. Sunday nights I go to the CW because I know there's like some good faith and family, content that we can all sit around if we're not watching football. And so it was certainly a strategy about trying to build audience expectation because we were changing so many things. So the idea, and then obviously you look competitively across, what all the other broadcasters are doing, et cetera, and you realize, wow, if we want to get into comedy, Mondays feels like a really good night for comedy. Nobody else is doing it there. Adult dramas, especially female-fronted adult dramas, felt really good on a Wednesday night. Inside the NFL has for 40 years been on Tuesday night, so easy to kind of just leave that right there, and that'll be more of a male audience. Thursday nights is one of the biggest hot nights in all of television, and we have a very big, loud, unscripted show that, that audiences are – that have watched The Bachelor and Bachelorette and Love Island and those types of shows, Survivor, they will all come to appreciate that on Thursdays. And so it was very, very purposeful in trying to build audience expectation and viewing habits.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask this later this half hour, but since you just brought it up, we'll do it now. You're taking chances in some very unique partnerships, and one of them, which starts Thursday night, is with Roku. And the Roku channel with this program called Fight for Survival. How did that happen?
Fight to Survive.
Fight Survive, excuse me.
Yeah. First of all, Fight to Survive is an awesome show. That is a smash hit show. I hope people find it. I hope your viewers tune in. So I will just give that a little plug here. This Thursday night, Fight to Survive at 8 o'clock on the CW. If you like Survivor, if you like any of those type of survival shows, you'll really, really enjoy that show. It's just packed with energy and excitement and competition. It's great. That's a really great one. You know, we've been talking to Roku a lot about things that we can partner on. It's we feel like when you think of everything that the CW has and everything that that Roku has, it's a very, very complementary relationship. That if you took the best of Roku and if you took the best of the CW and kind of put it together around a piece of content, that we could really compete with anybody. That the mix of these two platforms could go out there and expose content to as many viewers as possible. And it just felt like a really, really, you know, kind of smart partnership. Shows that are on the CW are some of the biggest shows in all of streaming. If you look at the Nielsen ratings recently, the streaming Nielsen ratings, on the same week that Succession finaled, on the same week that Ted Lasso finaled, All American on Netflix did better than either of them. And so there's still this great pedestal to launching shows on broadcast television. We all know that movies that go into theaters do better on streaming than movies that go straight to streaming. Shows that start on broadcast television or even, you know, linear cable television back in the day, which like we're seeing with Suits right now, doing so well in streaming. There is still a power to this platform of launching shows. And then people hear about it and they want to watch it, and then they can go kind of watch it wherever it's most convenient for them. So between a broadcast network that reaches 120 million households, a CW streaming platform that's been downloaded almost 100 million times, and then a Roku channel, a Roku environment that has, what, 60, 70 million active users a month, I think between both of our platforms, you put it together and we can really break a piece of content through. And that was the strategy, that we together could do better than either of us alone, and let's test out that strategy. And we have a lot of really good friends over at Roku. We all work well together. I think this is just the start of maybe more shows that you'll see us partnering on. But this is the first one, and we're super excited about it.
And then this partnership, the CW gets the premiere right, and then Roku, the Roku channel, another means, gets it like several hours later or the next day. Similar, for example, what happened last night with Winning Time, where HBO gets the premiere of the second season, and then Max gets it from then on.
Yeah, this one's going to be a little slightly different than that, because Roku I don't know if they always do it, but in general, Roku like putting all the episodes up at once, so that you can go there and you can binge them all. So actually, and look, every deal will be different and every show will be different, et cetera. But on this specific one, it'll premiere on the CW. You'll be able to watch it the next day on the CW app. At the end of the 8 episodes, the next day, Roku will put all 8 episodes up at once. And so at the end of the season, you'll be able to go and binge the entire thing on Roku. So that's how this one is working.
Do you see a Roku partnership involving scripted as well as unscripted television?
Yes. This first example that we're working with them on is this big unscripted show, Fight to Survive. It's a very big budget, very exciting, Survivor-type show with competitions built in. And a lot of the cast, people will recognize from other shows. Cast will have come from, like, Survivor and other shows, so there'll be a lot of name recognition in there. So this first partnership where CW premieres, CW plays all 8 episodes, and then Roku offers a binge experience. This is an unscripted show, but we have 2 or 3 more coming in a relationship with Roku, and some of those are scripted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've announced
scripted, you're already off the bat this summer with presenting shows that were made out of Canada, and we've covered 2 of them. Moonshine, which has gotten very good reviews in both the United States and Canada. Sherry Elwood, the executive producer, was on our show several weeks ago. And more recently, the lead off of the comedy block, Son of a Critch. Now you have Children Ruin Everything, which I saw the promo for it last night on Channel 11. That's the CW affiliate here in New York, as well as Run the Burbs. How are all four of those shows doing so far?
They are doing great. First of all, they've all been reviewed tremendously. Right? These are all new titles that viewers don't really know about yet. But whether it's the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the LA Times or Decider, et cetera, all of those shows have gotten very positive reviews. So we're very proud of the critical reception that the shows have received. And now we got to get people to watch them. And Son of a Critch started really strong. Children Right Ruin, everything started really strong. Our Friday night block between Family Law and Moonshine is doing great. Moonshine seems to be picking up viewers, especially in delayed viewing, especially with digital viewing, seems to be picking up viewers. But those shows are all shows to be really proud of. And look, we're in the summer months where, you know, people aren't watching as much television. And currently we're having a little disagreement with DirecTV where people can't watch the CW right now on DirecTV. Putting all that stuff aside, these have been great launches for all of these shows. And I think they're just going to keep picking up steam. We have a couple more seasons of Moonshine. There's a couple more seasons of Son of a Critch. There's a couple more seasons of Children Ruin Everything. So these shows are not going anywhere, and people will be able to kind of fall in love with them over time. And sometimes you just need a little patience. People will find these shows. They'll fall in love with these shows. They'll evangelize the shows, and they'll tell other people about it. As you and I both know, Schitt's Creek didn't really become a thing until like season 3, season 4. Like sometimes it just takes a minute for people to find these shows, but they have all started wonderfully.
Mm-hmm. I understand one week Son of a Critch got a second play on another night. Is that something you might do with the other shows like Moonshine, like Children of Everything, et cetera, or when Sullivan's Crossing and the Spencer Sisters come on, where you might test that out in terms of maybe 1 week, run it twice a week on different nights?
Yes, I think that's a very smart scheduling strategy, especially as you want to encourage sampling. And so, yes, we gave Son of a Critch and Children Ruin Everything and Run the Burbs. We've given them some other kind of repeats on the schedule to try and enhance the sampling of those shows because we do love them. We want people to find them. Sullivan's Crossing will get a repeat probably on Sunday nights to give that more sampling. It's just a really smart scheduling strategy as we build these new titles. Again, we have a lot of turnover on the network. There's a lot of titles that people haven't heard of, so we have to give them as much opportunity as possible to find them. And so playing shows on more nights in different time slots on different nights just help us play with the sampling in the early days. That'll pay off later.
You're hearing Brad Schwartz. He is the president of programming at the CW, and he is our guest for the full hour of our two-hour edition, our anniversary edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. He joins us live from Burbank, California. Simon Abbott with you live from Nueva York, 78 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes to kick off year 17. We'll be back with you Thursday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. You can also catch me in person on Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Newswire, the daily sports news information show on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, Amazon Freebie, and other multi-channel bundles. And the second half hour, we'll talk to Brad about the CW's expanded role in television sports, including the latest on Live Golf, the Atlantic Coast Conference football and basketball package that starts next month on your local CW affiliate, the NASCAR Xfinity Cup circuit that was announced for 2025 a couple of days ago, and much, much more. So stay tuned for all of that. But first, Brad, talk about the fact that you're going to be showcasing all of these Canadian-produced shows, comedies and dramas. As I mentioned, Sullivan's Crossing is coming up this fall. So is the Spencer Sisters with Leah Thompson as one of the sisters. What does it say about, A, how Canadian television has evolved in terms of being, it's not, you know, it used to be for years it was a second class, it was considered second class compared to U.S., but now it's considered, hey, as good in terms of U.S. production as anybody. And secondly, where does this leave the opportunity for U.S.-produced scripted shows, assuming that we finally get a deal with the Writers Guild and the Actors Guild?
Yeah, that's it exactly. I mean, Simon, as you know, I am Canadian, and so I have a little unfair advantage in that area where I have grown up making television in Canada. I run networks in Canada. I have a lot of friends in Canada. And the TV that is made up there is as good as any. We've seen the Orphan Blacks of the world break into the Emmy race. Schitt's Creek won more Emmys than any comedy in history. Transplant is a show from Canada that'll be on NBC this fall. The great thing about working with Canada is obviously, first of all, you have tremendous talent, both acting talent, writing talent, directing talent. Martin Garrow is one of the biggest showrunners in all of Hollywood. There's some huge Canadian directors, huge Canadian actors, whether it's Seth Rogen, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Reynolds, et cetera, et cetera. There's just a tremendous amount of talent up there. And the other great thing about producing television in Canada is there aren't accents. It's, you know, sometimes producing shows in partnership with the UK can you can get a product where audiences here feel like that show wasn't made for them. Where partnering with Canada just gives you a lot of advantages in making shows that work for North America. I mean, we all knew, nobody didn't know that Schitt's Creek was a Canadian show, but they didn't say Schitt's Creek, Ontario, right? It was just Schitt's Creek was like Springfield from The Simpsons. It could be anywhere. And Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are comedy legends, and Dan Levy has become one of the great TV showrunners. Up-and-coming showrunners in our industry. So I know the industry well. I know how tax credits and everything work. I know all the people up there. I'm also a little bit of a proud Canadian and want to take Canadian stories to the world. But there's also smart business. You know, there's great tax incentives up there. There's great government funding in Canada. And to come on and be an active partner in shows gives those shows all of the advantages to succeed. You know, we at Pop TV, we were involved with Schitt's Creek right from the very beginning, and we were able to help nurture that show. A lot of these shows, maybe the first seasons of these shows, we were not involved in, but future seasons of the shows, we are co-producers on, and we are actively, you know, participating in. And then and there are some more co-productions that are coming that we haven't even announced yet that we've built from scratch with our partners. So Canada just seems to be a really interesting place to be able to partner with and make great content with. And they've certainly, as you said, have proven to be very successful, especially recently, with shows that can live on a world stage. And that goes all the way back to, you know, my involvement in helping produce Degrassi, which also won a Peabody and got Emmy nomination. So there are a lot of talented people up there, and I love working with them.
And a personal disclosure, one of the things that I am personally very delighted about over the 16 years of the show is that we have covered the maturity of Canadian television. We have had producers and creators of people like Transplant, Flashpoint, Mark Stern, Stephanie Morgenstern, the producer of that show were on our program. Flashpoint won a bunch of awards in Canada, so the Canadian version of the Emmy Award, and of course had a great run on CBS and Ion TV, Due South. Paul Haggis came out of that program, the person who made the movie Crash, and other such talents. And we're very happy that we've been able to document on this program the growth of original Canadian-produced television. What about co-productions in the United States and other countries, England, so on and so forth?
Yeah, so, you know, so we had a phase one where we knew a lot of the CW shows weren't coming back. And then we found out that the big CW shows that we do have coming back, the All-American and All-American Homecoming and Superman and Lois and Walker, were going to be affected by the strike. And so we knew some of our homegrown U.S. shows were going to be delayed a little bit. So the result of that is that the CW will have more scripted content, original scripted content, on its fall schedule than any other broadcaster. So that's kind of exciting. But coming behind that will be a lot of developed in-house, developed from scratch, U.S. productions, in addition to co-productions and international acquisitions, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a mix of everything. We are going to find shows that we love to make, We're going to be find shows that we think can break through in culture, things that kind of maybe hit a cultural nerve so you get people talking about it. And then we figure out how to make those shows. And some of those shows will be homegrown and made here in the U.S. Some of them will be co-productions with the U.K. or Australia or Canada. Some of them will be smackquisitions. Some of them will be unscripted content. We have about 10 unscripted shows in production right now, many of which haven't even been announced yet, but just really big swing unscripted series that are all currently in production that we have all built from scratch. We hired an incredible new head of unscripted, Heather Olander, who used to run unscripted for USA and NBC and Peacock, and she is a superstar executive. And her and her team have just been going crazy and getting new shows going.
What kind of a role do you see for independent producers? Because it seems that one of the programs you've just put on, The Chosen, the critically acclaimed series about the life of Jesus Christ by Angel Studios, independent company, which has already been played elsewhere. It looks like it's gotten off the block, become a new Sunday night favorite, and growing on the CW. What role do you see for them or for other independent studios or independent producers?
Yeah, we just got the numbers. The Chosen beat The Simpsons on Fox last night. That was kind of fun. Yes, I feel like working with independent producers will be an absolute strategic path for us. I think sometimes, you know, we have to find great storytelling, find great talent, and then we have to find really efficient ways to tell those stories. That type of efficiency, that type of what I like to call scrappiness, sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes the larger studios have a hard time getting, with their overheads and how used they are to making huge, amazing productions. It's hard for them to really get their heads around sometimes the efficient and scrappy way that we need to make content so that we can still be ambitious, we can still produce wonderful stuff, but we can do it a little, you know, less expensively than what a major studio might have to produce it at because of their overhead, et cetera, et cetera. So that leads you to working with wonderful independent companies, independent producers, where you might be able to find a piece of talent that's that has a passion project, and everybody's willing to do it and kind of scrape it together and do it at a really efficient price and still tell a great story. And I've had a history with that in my life. Like, we did Dan Levy's first show, which was Schitt's Creek, which, you know, Dan worked 24 hours a day and made that show incredible and made it look like it was twice the budget that it was. When we did a show I remember you liking when I was at Fuse, Billy on the Street, which was Billy Eichner's first show. Mm-hmm. And we did that show really scrappy and really efficient. When we did Prentice Penny's first show, it was a scripted show called The Hustle. And we did that at a really efficient level. He's now become one of the top showrunners in all of Hollywood. So I think there is something to working with independent producers, up-and-coming talent, in order to still tell great stories and do it in an efficient way. And by the way, it's the Jason Blum model, right? It's the Jason Blum model of let's go produce things that are great. Let's produce things where everybody is incentivized in its success, incentivized to do well, and not just spending money because you can.
Mm-hmm. Let's end the first half of our conversation today on this note. Where do you see things going with the writers and the actors and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers in terms of trying to deal with a new contract that everybody can live with, especially given this new environment of residuals for mega content services like Netflix and Peacock and so forth, but also the situation with artificial intelligence, where everybody is very clear that this is going to become a major way in how TV content going forward will be created and produced, and that it's important, no matter how this develops, that some parameters, or some might say guardrails, should be set up so that writers and actors don't get fearful of becoming obsolete at some point.
Yeah, I'm, you know, not to pass, but I'm not the greatest person to ask about all of this. We at the CW and Nexstar, we are not a struck company. I'm not in the weeds with everything that's going on. But for me, you know, personally, and how I feel about things, I've always, this goes back to my first jobs in media where I was a manager for bands. And I always just kind of felt like your job was to make the creative and my job was to help you make money for your creative. My job was to find the highest mountain and get the loudest megaphone and scream to the world about your art that writers and actors and creative people made. And so I'm always a champion of creatives. I'm a champion of the creative process. And then my job is to try and make sure everybody makes money and has careers. So I hope that this all gets sorted out. And I do believe, and again, this is something I've learned from Jason Blum, I think it's incredibly important for everyone to be incentivized in success. And for us, maybe that means spending a little less on things and giving people even more opportunity to enjoy the success. But incentives need to be in the right place, and we need to make sure that people do very well when their shows do well, and to just champion creatives. So I hope it all gets worked out. I just don't have enough of the details to really dig into it. But I do hope it gets worked out shortly so we can get back to telling stories.
Coming up in the second half of our live conversation with Brad Schwartz, the programming president at the CW, the situation with the CW getting a big role in sports, from the LIV Golf Tour to the recently announced deal with the Atlantic Coast Conference for football and basketball starting next month. We'll also ask about where the CW app is going to go, and about something that Brad said last Friday on TV's Top 5 that we want to explore, the possibility that you may have more than one CW channel coming your way through your smart TV set or smart device. All of that and your phone calls and chat and reaction coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Women Who Jam Radio tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio. If you love entertaining radio, Women Who Jam Radio is the show for you. Tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best DTR 24-7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our two-hour live anniversary edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, starting our 17th year on the air this very Monday afternoon. So I'm having with you live from New York, 79 degrees, the bottom of the hour, joined by Brad Schwartz, the president of programming at the CW, coming your way from beautiful downtown Burbank in California. Brad, obviously you are carving out with your network new territory, expanded sports on the weekends. Let's start first with LIV Golf. How's it doing?
LIV Golf has been amazing. We, I think when Dennis Miller and I took these jobs, I don't think our first thing that we thought was going to happen is that we would be getting into sports or expanding our day parts, et cetera, et cetera. And then and we got really fortunate with this great partnership with LIV Golf. It was a new league, just getting started, and they wanted the reach of broadcast. We all know the power of broadcast. NFL games on broadcast do 40% better than they do on Amazon Prime. We have local Clippers games on KTLA here in Los Angeles that do 40% better than they do on the regional sports network. Like, if you are going to be a legitimate, strong sports league, you need the reach of broadcast television. It's just proven time and time again. So the idea of LIV Golf, which was investing a lot in creating a big golf sports league to be on broadcast television, was important. And we were able to get sports on the CW. And the CW historically has been 2 hours a night, 7 nights a week. And now we got to open up Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 6, 14 weekends a year of live golf. And live golf with the greatest golfers in the world, from Cam Smith to Brooks Koepka to Sergio Garcia to Dustin Johnson to Phil Mickelson.
And let's not forget Bryson DeChambeau, who won the tournament yesterday with a 58, which hasn't been seen in decades.
I,
on television.
I am so glad you said that. I mean, I was watching it live on the CW when it happened, and I jumped up and down with him. I mean, that was just what an incredible. And by the way, it could have been better. There were two shots that he had that it could have been a 56. But yes, just a legendary once in a lifetime day in golf yesterday with Bryson shooting a 58. So it's been a lot of fun, and it kind of gave us permission to do more sports because we got some experience in it, and experience selling it with advertisers, experience putting it on the air, experience putting it on the app, seeing how it does, seeing how it performs. And the greatest thing is it just brings more people into the CW. It gives us circulation in the afternoon that we can talk about our primetime shows that are coming. We've never had that before. It brings a new viewer to the CW. Look, we know what drives a rating point. It's math. It's three things. It's new viewers, it's frequency, and it's time spent. So by putting 5 hours of golf on Saturdays and Sundays, I guarantee you that is bringing new viewers to the CW. I guarantee you those viewers are spending more time on the CW. And I guarantee you if they came on Saturday, that they'll come back and watch the final round on Sunday. Maybe if we're really good marketers, we'll get you to watch Sullivan's Crossing and Son of a Critch and come back again. So sports is giving us new viewers, it's giving us more time spent, it's giving us more frequency. And so then that, which I'm sure is going to be your next question, you know, led us into doing more sports deals and finding more sports partnerships. But LIV Golf has been amazing. It's been so fun. It's fun to go to the events. It's a really fast-moving product with some of the best golfers in the world. It really is just so, and it's a new format. It's an exciting format. And the more people get into it, the more viewers are just going to keep pouring into that show.
Mm-hmm. What's been the advertiser reaction to the show? I'm talking about the national advertiser reaction. It seems that from watching the coverage on Channel 11 here in New York, WPX, that the local advertisers are involved. It seems the national advertisers, for the most part, whatever national advertiser you're getting, it's not a lot of major advertisers. I think one of Canada's Verizon. On the show, on the coverage I saw yesterday, LensCrafters was a national advertiser. Norton LifeLock is a national advertiser. Has there been any backlash from advertisers basically saying, we'd love to get your coverage, but we're scared about the PGA? Or we're scared about another golf tour, chiming like, why the heck are you doing this?
Yeah, so let me take some of those questions point by point. First of all, this has been a windfall for our local stations. As you said, the local stations have been able to sell sports and go out and get amazing local advertisers and make a lot of money with the sports that they have. So at the local level, you're absolutely right. All the local stations have done extraordinarily well with live golf on the air. You're also right in saying that we have had some great national advertisers. Verizon, you know, advertises within it. Skechers, we've had Nutrafol and Athletic Greens and et cetera, and you mentioned LensCrafters. There have been some great national advertisers that have come in as well. And to your third point, I think a lot of advertisers did really, maybe it was because of the controversy, maybe it was a brand new league on a new network, a lot of people did kind of take a little bit of a wait and see. Let's wait and see. Let's see how it does. Let's see what the feedback is, et cetera, et cetera. We also, you know, we closed that deal like 3 weeks before the first tournament, so it wasn't something we were able to sell in last year's upfront. So now people know what the product is. People know how it's doing on the CW. We've now been able to sell it in an upfront season, which we didn't have a year ago. And now with the PGA and LIV and you know, kind of maybe merging, coming together, all of a sudden, all of those barriers, all of those chains are kind of off, right? All the controversy, all the PGA, involvement, all of that's kind of been cleared now. And so advertisers can be a little more confident in coming and sponsoring LIV. And we've seen incredible reaction to it in this upfront where lots of national advertisers are starting to come into it now.
Mm-hmm. Are there, so before we get to the Atlantic Coast Conference, are there now different scenarios that you and your ad salespeople are working with, depending on what unfolds with this relationship with the PGA and its fellow tours? Whether, yes, you'll have live golf events, or you'll have live and a combination of, what scenarios are you dealing with?
We were just at a big upfront presentation last week for the Live Golf League, and the Live League did announce that there would be 14 events in 2024, that 7 of them will be international events and 7 of them will be domestic events. And so we're very, very confident and very excited about the league continuing to grow and growing into 24. And as for the rest of it, I I'm not involved. I can't speculate as to what's going on with the merger with PGA and what results may come out of that. What I do know is that this is an exciting league, continues to grow. The CW continues to grow with it. And 2024 is going to be another great year forward.
So let's get now to the Atlantic Coast Conference, which is a huge deal. This is the package that, until this year, it used to be on, for both football and basketball, on regional sports networks, which would be carried, and here in New York would be like all over the map in terms of what networks would run. Now these football and basketball games are going to run on the CW on weekend afternoons. What can you say so far about, A, the coverage, when it will start, who will be, if we can take, will there be like one major play-by-play commentator team, and so forth?
Yes, it is thrilling, and we were just in Charlotte a couple weeks ago for the ACC Media Days, and between ABC, ESPN, and now the CW and the ACC Network, fans of the ACC are going to be able to watch more ACC football and basketball than ever before. This, again, it was a very opportunistic opportunity for us. The regional sports network was having some troubles, and there was a package of games that was on that regional sports network that they needed to find a new home for and find a new home for really quick. And again, we know how cable television is going these days, and it's getting less and less viewers, potential viewers with cord cutting, et cetera. And so the idea of being able to take ACC football and basketball, supplement ESPN and ABC with another broadcast network that can reach 120 million households was really exciting for the ACC and really exciting for us. This is a Power Five conference. You've got Clemson, you've got Florida State in football, and of course everyone knows the pedigree in basketball. So we will have 13 football games, 28 basketball games, 9 women's basketball games. These will be on mostly on Saturdays, with the women's basketball games being on Sundays. So it's over 50 ACC games on the CW. The first week of it, we will be putting it into prime time, which is very exciting. But September 9th, with Pitt and Cincinnati going against each other in prime time on the CW.
Mm-hmm. Are there any plans to follow suit with what ESPN does and what Fox has done in recent years, and that is do a hour or 2 hour pregame show along the lines of College Football Game Day and the Big Noon Kickoff show that Fox now does?
No, I think, we are guaranteed a certain amount of Clemson games and a certain amount of Florida State games. And in basketball, we are guaranteed a certain amount of Duke games and North Carolina games. And so for those big marquee matchups, we'll see if we can't enhance the productions a little bit. But for the most part, the football games fit into a 3.5 hour game window. So there's a little bit of a pre-show, a little bit of a post-show, et cetera. The basketball games fit into a 2 hour window. And as we get closer to the tournament, we'll be doing some doubleheaders in prime time with 2 basketball games back to back. So it's just, again, a really, really exciting step for us. If you're going to be a major broadcaster, if you're going to compete with everybody, if you're going to provide value to all of the local stations, sports is really important. And by taking 14 live weekends of Live Golf and now adding 50 ACC football and basketball games, and inside the NFL on Tuesday nights throughout the entire NFL season. And then I'm sure you're going to ask me this next, our NASCAR deal that kicks in 2025. We've gone from having zero sports hours on the CW to having 300 hours of sports this year on the CW. And in 2025, we'll have over 450 hours of sports on the CW, and we will have live sports 48 weekends a year.
We have a call coming in. We're going to take it in a moment. But first, sort of expanding on the NASCAR situation, and given the fact that the amount of sports is going to grow each year from now on, from this year to next year to 2025, has there been any talk about, A, doing a wraparound show, let's say before and after the coverage, and or secondly, doing an anthology show? One thing we haven't seen in a long time has been the ABC Wide World of Sports, the NBC Sports World, the CBS Sports Spectacular kind of program. CBS Sports Spectacular is more sporadically of late in recent years. That covers other sports in an anthology approach.
I got to tell you, Simon, you should be a programmer. That's a really interesting idea. What we have thought about is, you know, we had a show that we were very proud of that was on the air last year called 100 Days to Indy, and it was a documentary series that followed the IndyCar circuit. And now with more sports fans coming to our network, coming for Inside the NFL, coming for ACC football and basketball, coming for LIV Golf, into 2025, coming for NASCAR. And like you said, we are just getting started. We are not done with sports. That we shouldn't find programming and think of programming that audience would be interested in watching. And so we are thinking a lot about that. I wouldn't say we've specifically thought about an ABC Wide World of Sports or pre-games or post-games, but we have thought about what other content, people that watch NASCAR, people that watch LIV Golf, people that watch ACC basketball and football might also enjoy. And again, all of this is very, very new. So we're just kind of getting into it all right now. So I don't have answers, but to program content that sports viewers would like to see more of is certainly a priority.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon, it's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to have you, our super fan from Philly. Happy Monday afternoon to you, and thanks for your great support over the years with our show. And you're on the line with Brad Schwartz from the CW. Go ahead.
Well, first, Simon, I definitely wanted to congratulate you on 17 years of success, and I'm wishing you 17 more.
Thank you. I got that. Thank you so much.
But, hey, Brad. First, I wanted to say, since you're not the first B-Rad at the CW, is there any talk of ever bringing back the Jamie Kennedy experience? And I sort of wanted to follow on that because I bring that up because I see a lot of clips online on like Reels, Instagram Reels, places like that, of like Jamie Kennedy experience clips still. It's still out there a lot. And do networks have any way of actually making money? Is it profitable putting Reels like on TikTok and Twitter and stuff like that, or not really?
Well, first of all, Rick, I went to college in Philadelphia. I have a warm spot in my heart for Philadelphia. I am a big Philadelphia Eagles fan, so thank you for calling in. I love that you're calling from Philly. Yeah, to answer your question, there is wonderful ways to make money off of library content, for sure. You can put clips up on YouTube, put clips up on TikTok, all of these platforms, if you've signed up, you know, in the right way, give you a percentage of ad revenue, et cetera, against that content. So if you're the person that controls the Jamie Kennedy experience content and you're putting that on YouTube and you're getting views, you know, millions and millions of views, there is a way for you to take, a small piece of the ad revenue against that content. So there is definitely a business there. We don't own that content. I remember the show, and obviously he's a wonderful talent, and that show is really funny. But it has nothing to do with the current CW. But in general, if you own a library of content that can do well, especially across social platforms these days, there is a way to make money off it. Yes.
Cool. I just never knew whether that was just a way to drive discovery for networks or like a total loss meter, or whether you could actually make a little bit of profit off that. But well, thanks for answering the question, and continued success, and wishing you success with the network and airing all the sports and everything, Brad. So thanks for answering my question, and congrats, Simon, again on 17 years.
Thank you so much, Rick. I deeply appreciate it. And if you'd like to go back in the second half of the show, we get into the writer's strike and then the SAG-AFTRA and also college football, and I want to get into the Women's World Cup situation, you're welcome to call back in the second half. We'd love to have you.
Okay, thanks, Simon.
You're welcome. Take care. Rick, we have our friend from Philadelphia here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And if you have a question or a comment you want to catch with Brad Schwartz, the performing president at the CW, give us a call, as Rick did, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. In our remaining time with you, Brad, let's do a little lightning round, a couple things. First of all, what is the status of the CW app? A lot of people think it's just web, but I believe it's also on smart TV sets and smart devices. What kind of a role do you want to have, the network have, with smart sets and devices and multi-channel bundles?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, one of the things when I got this opportunity, this wonderful opportunity with Nexstar, was to look at the CW and ask yourself, how do we compete against all these titans out there? And what do we have that's kind of different or unique and with which to jump off of? And first and foremost, it starts with broadcast television, that we have this incredible platform, this legacy, the best of legacy media. Netflix doesn't have it, Amazon doesn't have it, Roku doesn't have it, et cetera, et cetera. It really is a unique piece of a unique platform with which to launch content and power all of our local stations and still be able to reach everyone. And then something that the former regime at CW and Mark Pedowitz and his whole team were very pioneering and very innovative with, they launched a free streaming platform that has really gone under the radar and is wildly successful and is an app that has been downloaded almost 100 million times. And so between the best of legacy media with a broadcast network that reaches 120 million homes, and the best of streaming media, a free streaming platform that has been downloaded over 100 million times, there's really no barrier to anyone watching CW content. There's a barrier to watching Netflix. You have to subscribe. There's a barrier to watching cable TV. You have to subscribe. There are barriers where you have to put email addresses in, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to watch All American or Superman and Lois, you can do it anywhere you want. You could be camping in the woods and put up rabbit ears and watch Superman and Lois, or you can be sitting at home and download the app and watch Superman and Lois. And so it's a really interesting place to jump off of and think about that as you make your programming choices. We're not CBS and Pluto. We're not Fox and Tubi. We're the CW, and we're the CW everywhere. And we want to make sure that, A, we support our local stations. First and foremost, that is where everything starts, and that is the priority. But then to make sure that that people can enjoy CW content in the places in the places that they live.
Along with that, when you were on TV's Top 5, the Hot Reporters podcast last week, you suggested to Leslie Goldberg and Daniel Feinberg that one thing the CW is looking at is linear channels distributed on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, the so-called fast channel movement. Are we talking about, for example, the idea of putting some of the library CW content on these and maybe mixing it with new stuff on these channels? And then what is the status of that?
Well, we recently hired an incredible new chief digital officer. Her name is Ashley Hovey, and she joined us from Roku, and she's incredible and a superstar, and she is very focused on building out the CW digital strategy. But part of that strategy is making sure that no matter where you are, people can enjoy CW content. And so, you know, historically, we've never really had the right to take CW content and go other places with it and monetize it in other places. And with the new direction of the channel, we will. We will have more ways of monetizing our content. And so everything starts with the broadcast network. And then, you know, in windowing strategies, which I think is a lost art over the past few years, to be able to build out a CW streaming platform and then to take the CW bucket of content and put it under a CW branded flag and take that to other places. And that can be fast channels, that can be hubs in other areas. I think we will only be held back by our innovation and our entrepreneurism. To take the CW into many new places to make sure that people are enjoying CW content and that we are monetizing it. So I think we are looking at all opportunities in front of us to distribute CW content.
Let's wrap things up, Brad, with two other opportunities. One that the CW is still doing, which is Saturday morning television through the multi-hour block that's programmed by Hearst Video Production Unit. And the other is daytime, weekday daytime, that for a while you had the Bill Cunningham show in syndication. There was the Robert Irvine show for two seasons. Where does the CW stand on those two opportunities going forward?
Yeah, you know, I have only been here 6 months. I have been very focused on building an incredible team, on executing against our sports strategy, on executing against our primetime strategy, executing against our strategy to have more rights to our programming so we can monetize things in more places, and thinking about that daytime syndicated stuff and the kids programming on weekends are just two areas I haven't really spent a lot of time. So I don't want to make up an answer for you. So just two areas that I still have some stuff to learn about. So I'll kind of pass on that. But children's programming on the weekend is, you know, that's something from an FCC. That's part of our licenses. We have to do that. So I can't imagine, you know, that's going to go anywhere. How it evolves, I just haven't spent enough time with it yet.
Are there, as a follow-up, are there any opportunities we haven't talked about that you are looking at as pertinent to the CW's future?
No, not really. I think sports is the big one. We have, I guess you could say, shelf space that maybe a lot of the other broadcasters do not. You know, everyone is so filled up with so many sports, so many big sports, so many priority sports. It's hard for other networks to find shelf space to put stuff. And so you find people pushing them off to their streaming platform or pushing them off to their other, networks, secondary networks and third networks. And for us, we still have a ton of opportunity to expand into more sports. And, you know, Sundays is still a great opportunity for us. And primetime is still a great opportunity for us. So I think that's the big one, is how do we maybe get, is there some Friday night sports that we can find? Is there some Sunday afternoons that we can start building up? I think those are kind of the biggest answer to your question that's on the immediate horizon. I don't think there's anything else that would be bigger than that.
The CW is available all over the country on cable, on satellite, also through the CW app. So check your local listings for where the CW is available in the area. Primetime, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. Also on the weekends, not now with selected weekends with Live Golf Tour coming up this fall in September, the beginning of Atlantic Coast Conference football on Saturday afternoons, then later on Atlantic Coast Conference basketball, including doubleheaders, including primetime on Sunday afternoons, plus women's games as well. So check your locally for all of that. And coming up in September, the return of the award-winning series Inside the NFL, now in primetime on the CW. For more details online, go to CWTV.com, the CWTV.com. Brad, thank you very, very much for a wonderful hour. Congratulations on what you and Dennis Mill and everybody have done already with the CW, and hopefully there is a lot more to come.
There is definitely a lot more to come. Thank you, Simon. It's always great to talk to you. And I love all this energy you have. This has been a lot of fun, and I can't wait for my next invitation back.
You got it. And thank you for kicking off year 17 of our program in a great, great way, Brad. All the greatest. Take care.
Thank you very much. You'll be old enough to drink soon.
Absolutely. Brad Schwartz, the president of Promi of the CW, joining us live from beautiful downtown Burbank, California. We come back, hour number two of our anniversary episode. We'll be talking about the latest. We'll break down the writer's strike, the actor's strike, what's the possibility of a settlement in both cases. And in our second half hour of the second hour, we will talk about the realignment of college football, ACC included, and a little wrap-up on the Women's World Cup performance on television so far and how it'll be impacted by the U.S. team out of the picture. And we want to still hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Second hour of our two-hour anniversary edition begins after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. That's Entertainment Online, one of your great sources for entertainment news. It happens on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. So if you want a great source for entertainment news, TV, film, etc., go to That's Entertainment Online, Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second hour of our anniversary edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Yes, we started this program in the first Monday of August, 2007, and we are now in year 17, thanks to all of you. And we welcome those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 81 degrees here in the Big Apple. We had some rain earlier today. We're expecting more tonight and overnight. And if your area where the rain is going to be hitting up and down the East Coast, please take care, take it easy, use extra time, and check in with the loved ones. They will really appreciate it. I want to again thank Brad Schwartz, the Promi president of CW, for joining us live from California IA to kick off our 17th year on the air. And we've got more to tell you about, including our classic trivia question. We want to get you involved and get our first winner of year 17, and we might just do so today. So stay tuned for that coming up in a few moments. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. Whether you want to talk about something we cover on this hour or just about the world of television overall, all you got to do is give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. You also get into our chat room as our super fan from Philadelphia who called us during the last hour, Rick Webb, did. And that's SimonApple04 by name. That's the chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Get on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker to the screen. Follow those instructions. Other people can be live with you right now. And right now, let's bring you a feature that we've had on for nearly a couple years. It's our classic trivia question of the week. We pose a question for those of you that are tuning us in for the first time. And if you're first with the correct answer by email, you get a prize. In this case, two prizes. We've got a Chicago Greatest Hits CD with such tunes as If You Leave Me Now, Saturday in the Park, Feeling Stronger Every Day, 25-6-4, and so on. And we have an Uber card as well, courtesy of the great people at AMC Network. And those prizes can be yours if you know the answer and email it to this question. Who played the Thin Man on television? Who played the Thin Man on television? Thin Man, of course, the great MGM series of movies starring the early 1930s, starring William Powell as Nick Charles and Myrna Loy as his wife Nora, and, of course, that dog known as Asta. Well, for two seasons in the late 1950s, MGM did a television version of the Thin Man on NBC. You can catch episodes on YouTube, and we'll give you a hint. Phyllis Kirk was the Nora Charles character. So we want to know who played Nick, who played the Thin Man on television. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the answer, you win. Incidentally, this is our second week we posed the question, And over the weekend, we heard from one of our previous winners, Peter Tuning of Fairfax, Virginia. And guess what? Peter had the answer. Unfortunately, because he is a previous winner or a guest on this program, he is not eligible. But I did want to acknowledge him for getting the right answer. So to Peter Tuning from Fairfax, Virginia, one of our previous winners, thank you. You got the answer right, and we do appreciate you checking in with us via Facebook. So if you know the answer and you haven't won before, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Very important. Put down your name and your mailing address in the email so that if you win and then we announce it on the air, we'll get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, Monday, the 7th of August, 2023, we will post the question tomorrow morning both on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter, at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. One more time, the question. Who played the Thin Man on television? Remember, you can get episodes of the Thin Man on YouTube, which is available online, available on your mobile phone, available through smart TV sets and smart devices. So let's see if we get our 17th year underway with a winner, our first of hopefully many in the year ahead. And to all the previous winners, we acknowledge you for doing your thing and coming up with winning notes. So how about you joining them today? And, of course, all the very best. Well, we had hoped, to be fair and to be upfront with you, that we would have another guest in our second hour. We did that last year. Last year we had, for our anniversary episode, we had Amy Winter, the head of programming at Lifetime, the Women's Network on cable and satellite, and we had the head of topic, the Mega Content Service. Unfortunately, this year we do not. It's not the lack of trying. We contacted 15-plus executives, and we did hear back from many of them. Unfortunately, could not make the time, as Brad Schwartz did from the CW. And in some cases, they were concerned because of the ongoing strikes between the Writers Guild of America, the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA, the Actors Union, and the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. So I have a hunch that that may have been a big factor why either people could not come on or we did not hear back from some of the executives that we wanted to get. And that's why we're going to take up most of this half hour dealing with breaking down the strikes, why they're happening, what the key issues are, and where do we go from here. And then in our second half hour, we're going to get into a story that really broke big this past week, and especially over the weekend, the realignment of college football and television's role in having it, especially with the what was the Pac-12, now the Pac-4, and probably this is the last year that we'll ever have a Pac conference. And we'll also check out how TV is doing with the Women's World Cup tournament and how TV will be impacted by this past Sunday's game where the United States, thanks to what personally I thought was the most atrocious penalty kick performance I have ever seen a men or women's team do, got knocked off by Sweden, who has a goalkeeper that was incredible, absolutely tremendous. The most valuable player, maybe not only of that game, maybe the tournament, depending on how well Sweden does from here, starting with the quarterfinals. I believe they play Japan on Friday morning. And again, we'd like to hear from you. And we'd also like to hear your thoughts about their show. We'd like to hear your thoughts about what you see TV overall, because we'll also in our last half hour get into what's ahead for TV, we think, these next 12 months. And we've got some interesting news about the future of our show, too. So stay tuned for all of that and respond to it also. We do appreciate it. So let's get into where we stand with these strikes. The writer's strike is now over 100 days old. The actor's strike is now in its fourth week. They have shut down scripted production here in New York, in Hollywood, and all over the United States. And on Friday, there was a meeting between the head of the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers, known as AMPTP, as well as the chief negotiator for the Writers Guild. The Screen Actors Guild did not participate, SAG-AFTRA. And unfortunately, among all the reporting, the meeting did not go well. Two possible reasons. Number one, in memos that were distributed to Writers Guild membership beforehand, you got a sense that the Guild was setting the Guild membership up for failure, that don't be cautiously optimistic about getting the negotiations back on track. We don't think it's going to happen. And then at the meeting itself on Friday, which I understand ran for about an hour, both sides blew the situation wide open. First, the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers basically said to the writers, we've got this deal with the Directors Guild of America, and we basically want to structure your deal on their deal. And the Writers Guild came back with, guess what, Alliance? We got more demands. And ticked them off one by one, including the ability of individual guild members to stay on strike, to not cross the picket line of the actors until the actors got a deal. What a way to blow a meeting. So as a result, no talk scheduled, nobody's back at the bargaining table, although there has been some speculation over the weekend and into this morning that there may be another opportunity to get the bargaining table back in operation later this week. Why do we have this situation? What is the impact? Well, the impact, firstly, is you can kiss the fall season goodbye in terms of scripted television, with some exceptions, because some NBC programming, new series, were produced, enough episodes, before the strikes. Secondly, ABC is going to be running reruns of Abbott Elementary on Wednesday nights, two for an hour. And the CW, as you heard from Brad Schwartz, is going to have scripted television, largely from Canada. And very good shows, by the way. I've seen some of the shows that they're going to be running, and I think that you'll be very surprised by them. Sullivan's Crossing, The Spencer Sisters, they're very good shows. And if you have seen the comedy block, which is on tonight from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, Son of a Critch, Children Ruin Everything, Run the Burbs, very funny, very melancholy shows at times, really slice of life dramedies or comedies. And so far so good with the critical reaction too. Now, why are we having these strikes? When you cut through all the reporting, whether it's from print media, online, television networks, the business channels like CNBC, Bloomberg, and so forth, with both organizations, SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild, it boils down to two things. The first one deals with the fact that we are in a fundamental transformation of television, where the majority of viewership and the majority of how you watch television and use television is not through broadcasting cable or linear networks. It's through smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, and through mega content services like Netflix, Peacock, Max, Hulu, Prime Video, etc. Now, why is this important? Because when a television series that a writer produces or writes or an actor stars in is done on a broadcaster cable network, they get residuals because the shows are syndicated elsewhere to television stations, to other cable networks, etc. And that residual money is very important because it helps them before they get another on the way or en route to their next job, acting or writing. This is also happening at a time when these deals were structured at times when you had 22 episodes of a show produced in a season, and before that, 39, 26. That is not the case with the mega content services. Now you have 10 episodes or 8 episodes or even 6 episodes of a series of miniseries per season. And even and just as important, when a show on Netflix ends, or Hulu, or Peacock, or Paramount Plus, or Disney Plus, etc., ends, it doesn't go anywhere else. It is stored. It is archived. It doesn't go to a broadcast station. It doesn't go to syndication. It doesn't go to another cable network or broadcast network. And right now, the current contracts of both actors and writers does not include a clause for residuals on these services or on the services that are running through multi-channel bundle smart sets and devices. Like, for example, the network that Maximum Effort, the service Ryan Reynolds is doing for Fubo, the multi-channel bundle. Therefore, what the writers and the actors want is a whole new dimension of their contracts when it comes to residuals that incorporates how the situation with mega content services goes. And then there's another sticking point to this, which is that the mega content services do not release viewership data. How many viewers watch a show? And how that viewership rises or falls season to season? And that's critical because that is part of the residual payment for broadcasting cable shows, incurred contracts, which expired earlier this year. So what both the writers and the actors are calling for is some way to get at that data so that the residuals can reflect that. And they're even suggesting, well, if you don't want to provide it, fine. We want a third party to provide it. And that is a sticking point. So residuals, how actors and writers are paid from when a show ends its run on mega content services, and if it's archived and maybe never sees the light of day again in terms of being on another window, a broadcast network, a pay network, another television station syndication. So that is stickler number one. That's issue one. The other issue, and we've talked about this over and over again the last few weeks on this program, is artificial intelligence. And there's an irony to this, because it's artificial intelligence that is allowing people like you and me that have smart TV sets and devices to watch and use these sets with our voice, with body language, with a voice remote, and in the case of playing games on the television set without using a console like PlayStation or Xbox, using a device that you point at the set, a joystick-type device. Artificial intelligence incorporated in these products allows that. And it's also going to allow you to really take part in the fast-growing dimension of interactive television, whether it's ordering products and services, playing games, getting health services, health information, speaking with, you know, your friends and neighbors or your family members through video chat, etc. Well, the actors and writers are very concerned about how fast this artificial intelligence world is moving. It is moving at warp speed. There is no question anymore from people in the know in television that AI is going to have a huge impact on how television content is created and produced. And a lot of people think, rightly or wrongly, that unless there are parameters set, or as some people have called them, guardrails set now, despite how fast this movement is moving, that writers and actors will end up being obsolete. They will not have a job because artificial intelligence will generate the job for the content makers, for the studios or independent producers, et cetera, or the networks, et cetera, or services. Incidentally, in that meeting that took place on Friday between the Writers Guild and the Alliance, the Alliance said for the first time, yes, we are willing to be flexible on artificial intelligence. We are willing to set those parameters. And that got buried, by the way, in a lot of the coverage about that meeting. So those are the two sticking points, the two big issues. Everything else probably can be settled. Residuals for mega content and artificial intelligence, setting the parameters, setting the fences. So where do we go from here? Well, let me put it bluntly. We're not going to get anywhere unless everybody stops being inflexible. What really was about the outcome of that meeting and the rhetoric that came out afterward from the Screen Actors Guild, from the Writers Guild, and from the Alliance to a small degree, because they don't talk to the press. They like to hide behind talking points and release statements, which I think has been a big mistake on their part, personal thought, is that everybody seems to be very inflexible. Nobody wants to move off their dime. And everybody is waiting for the other party to make the move. And as we've said before, and we're going to say it again till the cows come home, I know it for some people who have heard this program in recent weeks. It's broken record all over again. And I plead guilty to it. A deal is not going to come on a picket line. You can have all the picketing and all the volatile rhetoric back and forth and all the name calling and all the making people wrong and organizations wrong. It's not going to get a deal done. What is going to get the road to making a deal that everybody can live with, and it can happen, is everybody moving off their dime and not waiting for the other party to make a move. They make the move. It was amazing that once again the Screen Actors Guild came out with a statement this morning saying that we weren't invited to the, you know, we're still waiting to hear from the Alliance of Motion Picture TV Producers. Why are you waiting? How about you making a move, Fran Drescher and Company? How about you making a move, Writers Guild? How about you make, at least to the credit of the Alliance, they made a move. Somebody may have heard our comments earlier, and that's why they had that meeting. It was the Alliance that stepped forward and said, okay, Writers Guild, and come on down. Let's talk. Let's get something going if we can. It's time for everybody to commit to getting at that bargaining table no matter what and making a deal. And if they need to have, as we've suggested, other people suggested, business leaders, not just labor negotiators, but business affairs leaders, maybe someone like a Mark Pedowitz, the former of the CW, who has a great relationship with creative talent and with actors, to get into the talks. Let's get talking. And to Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles, who has been saying, all right, if they want me to help negotiate, I'll get in. No, don't wait for them to give you the call. You get in there. It's time to stop the words, and it's time to act. If you want to participate, go participate. Don't just talk a good shop. Act it. Take action. That also goes for the New York City Council. I know they passed the resolution last week to support. How about not just passing a resolution, but sending a representative to the City Council and meet with the Alliance and meet with the Writers Guild, at least locally here in New York, and SAG-AFTRA here in New York. Excuse me. Get involved. Don't just talk a good shop. Don't just do a resolution on paper that maybe gets a minute or two on local newscasts. Get in the thick of the matter and work a deal out. It's not going to happen any other way. And if nobody makes a move, what's going to happen is that scripted television is going to pay the price. You can forget about scripted television this fall. You can also forget about the Emmy Awards and other award shows going through, unless they make a deal with the Writers Guild and the actors. It's time for everybody to get on the same page and start being flexible and stop being positional, and let's get a deal done. Guess what? It's not about you anymore, SAG-AFTRA. It's not just about you anymore, Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. It's not about you anymore, Writers Guild. It's about the entire TV industry when it comes to scripted television production. We're talking cinematographers and film editors and hairstyles and makeup people and caterers and production assistants and associate producers and, yes, the directors who have their contracts and script editors and lighting people. The whole continuum of people making a scripted television series. They now have their lives at stake because nobody is willing to come to the table. That has to stop. And we're also talking about the livelihood of Los Angeles, the livelihood of New York, the livelihood of Chicago, of Miami, of every other major production center in the United States. It's time to start thinking about them as well as your guild members. They want to work. And yes, they're on your side. And they realize, hey, if you don't get to that bargaining table, they don't work. So it's time to get off the dime and get back to the table. And if you need help, get help. If you need a federal mediator, get a federal mediator. And let's work a deal out. The only way you make a deal is communicating face to face, not with press releases, not with talking points, but with people like you and me, face to face, in person, where we can exchange ideas back and forth and work something out. It can be done. And it starts with everybody at the table. Everybody. And maybe, just maybe, if these organizations hear from you, that might push things along. Let's hope so. Love to hear what you have to say about it. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Anyway, we are delighted to be kicking off our 17th year of Tomorrow Be Televised today. Thank you all for joining us. I'm up with you live from New York, and we'd love to hear from you. And we'll let you know this is the first of three episodes we are doing this week. One of the things that we did in year 16, which wrapped up last week, was to go from having one three-episode week a month to two a month, at least two. And we thank you for that because your response over the last year to those episodes has been terrific. And it was important to do that because that's the way television is going. Things are happening all over the place. And we really appreciate your feedback. Remember, you can always reach me on social media at Facebook, LinkedIn, and, well, now the social media site known as X, formerly Twitter. At Facebook and LinkedIn, you can reach me at Simon Applebaum, and at X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. I do respond to your emails. I do respond to your social media inquiries within 24 hours. That's a promise we have had from the get-go, and we really appreciate you because you make this show work, and you make this show work in a great way. And if you're listening to this for the first time, I invite you to take down our phone number, 646-652-2906, so that if you can't listen to the show live on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, you can still participate. If you're going to be somewhere and you know they have a guest on that you want to hear and you want to respond to, take that phone number. And you can use it. Take down the chat room, SimonApple04. You get to it on blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can be part of the program, even if you can't listen to it directly or you're somewhere else beside your home that you can check us out. So we really appreciate it. We want to hear you. We want to hear more of you in this year ahead. And we'll give you definitely more opportunities to do so. Simon Applebaum with you along for the ride. Year 17 starts today on Tomorrow Be Televised. Jimmy, thank you all for joining us. We come back in our final half hour of this two-hour special. We're going to get into the crazier world of college football that was made crazier this weekend by what happened with the Pac-12 conference, which right now looks like this will be the final year of its long 100-year-plus existence. We'll also have some thoughts about TV and the Women's World Cup. In spite of the situation, the women's team, U.S. women's team in Sweden. And we'll also get into what's ahead for television the next year and our role in it. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, twitter.com, tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget the Fastlane Sports Show. I know they have a lot to talk about with Major League Baseball and Women's World Cup, soccer, and much, much more. It's on today at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The Fastlane Sports Show, Fast and Furious for sure, today, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. All right, welcome to our final half hour of this two-hour anniversary edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, and let's get right to a call to kick this half hour off. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon, it's Rick Webb calling in again.
Rick, welcome back in, and thanks so much for your question to Brad Schwartz, our first hour guest in the CW. He really appreciated it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on, frankly. You know, it's amazing to be able that a nobody like me gets to speak to the president of a television network. So, you know, it's just it's a great opportunity. My kind of question for you and sort of comment is about, like, just asking you, have you been reading up on the different articles about the strike and, like, why it's happening? And even, I have one up right now where it said Netflix had listed a $900,000 job, an AI job, that part of the job description, and this is during the strike, this was just recent, that the job said will be used to create great content and develop new algorithms and recommend shows and movies. So it's like, wow, like, who would put that out during the strike? It makes you look so bad. The article goes on to say that most actors are paid $200 a day for most performers. You know, of course, the stars that we hear about are paid millions, but all the rest of the actors are paid a day rate, and then, you know, you're gone. Sometimes a half-day rate, or you're paid as an extra if you have no lines. So, so I'm just wondering, like, what your take on certain articles like that are.
Well, let's take it one by one. First of all, I have been reading and watching a lot of the coverage, not just nationally through the Hollywood Reporter, Variety, The Wrap, Dental Hollywood Daily, but also the coverage on CNBC, on other business news channels, on also locally on local TV stations, because they've covered a lot of the picket lines here in New York. And it seems that, first of all, basically the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, as well as the Writers Guild, they're getting their side out more than the Alliance. And there's a very good reason why. The Alliance has been very, personally, very cowardly about getting their message out. We have tried to get the head of the Alliance or a key executive on this program. They will not go on our show. They will not go on TV's Top 5. They will not be interviewed by CBS Mornings or Today Show or Good Morning America or other news programs or on local television. And they come across as, we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to argue in the press. So all they do is come out with statements as well as talking points. When the Screen Actors Guild announced their strike, they did a press conference in Hollywood with Fran Drescher that was carried live on television. And the Alliance did not, which I think was a crazy situation. And yes, you're right. The Netflix, the announcement or the news that Netflix had put out an ad for a AI executive or supervisor was bad timing. It was bad timing that the story came out the way it did, especially given the fact that Ted Sarandos, the co-chief executive officer of Netflix, is on record, one of the very few executives who is, saying we want a fair deal. We did not want these strikes. We tried hard to not have one. I come from a union family. I know what it's like when members of my family go on strike. We did not want this. And we do want, and we are willing to work on a deal. The problem is that while individual executives like Sarandos, like Michael Cavanaugh, the head of Comcast, parent of NBC Universal, and so on and so forth, have said on record, we want a deal. The Alliance as a group, as an organization, has not. I think they come off as very cowardly. They come off, I think, very out of touch. Bob Iger did in the interview they did with CNBC. And that's another thing, too, Rick, is that there seems to be a lack of empathy. Empathy on the Alliance toward the guilds. And at the same time, there's a lack of empathy on the guilds toward what the Alliance has to deal with. Remember, these mega content services, with the exception of Netflix, for the most part, have yet to be profitable. And they're dealing with that. And residuals depending on how it's put together, is a very tricky subject because of the fact that it's unlike anything we've seen in television before, because of the number of episodes produced, because of the fact the viewership data on these shows are not released, and also because once these shows go off the air after their run, they're archived. They don't go to syndication, as was the case with broadcast television. They don't go to another cable network, the way, for example, TBS plays reruns of Seinfeld and The Big Bang Theory, or USA Network does Law & Order Special Victims Unit. It doesn't happen. So that also ties in. So there seems to be this really inflexible. So part of it is that some of the stories you mentioned are put together in are presented in inopportune times, and they make people and they make players look bad, as opposed to stimulating the all the parties to come to the table.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously very complicated, but you know, and it's difficult for both sides, because I can see that a lot of show production companies as well as networks were deeply planning on using AI for shows. And in fact, I've never seen this show, but it says there's currently a Netflix show called Deep Fake Love that uses contestants' faces to create AI-generated deepfakes within the show. I'm sure it's like a comedy or something, but it's like a Spanish reality dating series. So I can't really comment on it. I've never seen it. But, I mean, it's not only part of their plans in the future. They're using it now to create deepfakes. And, yeah, it's complicated. I saw a story about an actor that was on a video game. I guess it was probably the first time he acted in a video game. And so he didn't realize, or maybe he did realize, that he was giving away his face forever. So then the next time they came out with the video game, like part two of it, they didn't have to pay him. They just used his face. And apparently there's like a grisly death scene or something in it that they just, you know, used the AI and used his body and face in. And he was like, whoa, I didn't get paid a penny for that. And the video game made like $1 billion, I think. It's one of the biggest games of all time. And he didn't make any of it because he signed that away. And I guess legally there's not a darn thing he can do about it. And that seems patently unfair to, you know, once they get somebody's face, they're like, oh, well, we can just keep using it forever and never have to pay you again, which is, you know, again, really unfair, but I guess it was some loophole with acting within the video game or something. So I don't know. I'm not deep enough in it to really know one thing or the other. I just wanted to kind of give my opinion and sound in real quick.
Yeah, absolutely, Rick. And also another area that is really looking at AI in a major way is animation series. We're hearing about some new animation series coming soon that will incorporate either interactive elements or artificial intelligence elements. PBS announced that they have a new animated series. The head of PBS Kids talked about it, where it's coming out next spring, which will have artificial intelligence elements to it. So animation is another, and there's also talk about maybe having live-action animated shows that incorporate both, that maybe could do artificial intelligence in both areas, live-action animation, in the same program, in the same series. So that's how fast-moving this target is, and it's moving faster than anyone would have projected. In fact, at the start of the year, who was talking about generative AI? Who was talking about its role in television? And now everybody is. That is another part of the story, which is the parameters. So in terms of getting the parameters down and doing it in such a way that everybody can live with it and nobody thinks, oh, my God, at some point in the near or far future, my job's out. You know, I'm out of work for good kind of thing. Rick, while we have you, let's get you involved because I know you're a big sports fan. What do you think about this whole situation with college football? It seems that it looks like this year is going to be the final year of the Pac-12 conference, after more than a century of existence. And it looks like the big thing is TV rights. There's reporting that came out today in Awful Announcing, wonderful website, that suggests that Apple had proposed a deal to the Pac-12 where they would have a start scale, and it would be a streaming deal. It would be a deal that would be on Apple TV Plus, Apple TV set-top box, and smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. The problem, and apparently the sticking point, was there wasn't a linear element to it. There wasn't, for example, a continuation of their contract with ESPN or doing a broadcast network deal like they do with Fox for the Pac-12 games on Saturday afternoons and evenings and the Pac-12 championship game, et cetera, et cetera. And that may have been the sticking point to all these Pac-12 teams going to the Big Ten, to the Big 12, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, I don't know enough about it, to be honest. And, you know, I guess a lot of the Pac-12 teams aren't the biggest teams, like teams like is it Utah and Idaho and, or some of the teams that I don't know how many people nationally even care about it, you know, frankly, you know, it's so I don't know. The whole thing's confusing to me because I haven't been following it quite so much that you know, just in amateur sports now, there are certain players and whatnot that are they're able to make millions of dollars now. And so there's some talk that there is going to be a consolidation simply because of that certain schools are going to get all the best players and other schools aren't, and it's just going to be like a widening of the gap. So I don't know. I'd have to really listen to you to really find out more of what the future holds, to be honest, Simon.
Rick, you know, two things happened the last couple of days I've seen that were very interesting. One was a comment this morning on ESPN Radio from the president of the University of Washington, who basically said this was all about TV rights. And it was the fact that there was no, and she mentions by name, no linear element to it. It was all Apple TV Plus, Apple set-top box, et cetera, et cetera. And that bothered people. And the other thing is, and it was on ESPN Radio's morning show, which is a simulcast on ESPN2 and ESPNU, Amber Wilson and Ian Fitzsimmons were on today. And Ian Fitzsimmons made the point, and Amber did too, that one of the byproducts of this realignment, and there are teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference like Florida State and Clemson that are also thinking about getting back of their league, is that it's all predicated on football and football TV rights. Football makes the money for these universities, major universities, as opposed to basketball or gymnastics or college hockey, soccer, et cetera, et cetera. And if you predicate your movement to these super conferences based on football, what's going to happen with all these other athletes in every other sport who now have to travel thousands of miles to play other teams? Let's say Utah playing against Maryland, Utah playing against Rutgers in New Jersey, or Rutgers going to Oregon to play for a gymnastics meet. It gets crazy. It's going to impact a lot of student athletes in these other sports simply because these deals to leave leagues have been predicated by football activity and especially football TV rights.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, weren't they calling it an airplane conference or something about that?
Supersonic, you know, maybe like a supersonic transport conference or Concorde.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real shame, but that's the way it works. I mean, years ago I worked on a documentary, and it was about that, about how Nike would give a lot of money to the schools. And sometimes specifically, like part of it was about, like, even Joe Paterno was given millions of dollars to make sure that the football team, everybody had to wear Nike cleats, they had to have a Nike logo and shirts, they got a lot of free stuff for the football team, and they wouldn't even provide it for other sports teams. But basically the other sports teams weren't really getting much money, but it was the football team brings in so much money that it was tough. It was tough. Like the one person on the soccer team said, nobody wears Nike cleats. We all wear Adidas. And he was told, well, if you want to lose your scholarship and get kicked off the team, wear Adidas and go find another college. But otherwise you have to wear these Nikes because, you know, that wasn't University of Pennsylvania, or that wasn't Penn State. That was St. John's in New York. But nonetheless, that's how much power they have, and it's a shame for all the other sports, like you were saying, gymnastics. But then again, there are that isn't there a is it UCLA that has two girls on the gymnastics team that they're twins and they both make like millions of dollars in promotions and stuff like that?
Yeah, and of course, you hear the news. Simone Biles came back in the gymnastics field this weekend, did very, very well in her meet, got a standing ovation for her routines. Looked fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, well, is Simone Biles considered professional now, or is she amateur?
Still amateur.
Like still amateur? Oh, wow. See, I didn't even understand that part of it anymore with the way, you know, amateur sports works and everything like that. I've kind of,
yeah.
I don't know, washed my
anyway, I have one more sports topic to go to for you, Rick. But first, I want to show everybody, I think two things to keep in mind. Number one, we're entering a fall season. This may be the last season of college football as we know it. Although there is one big news, which is the fact that now we're going to see NBC doing college football in a major way now with not just Notre Dame football, but also the Big Ten with their new Big Ten Saturday Night Football package. You got CBS now is going to be running some Big Ten games also under their deal, or Big 12 games. Of course, ESPN, ABC with their Saturday Night College Football lineups. And now we have the CW with the Atlantic Coast Conference games, which will be Saturday afternoon. But also they're going to play Saturday night too, at least for one or two of the games. So and then they'll do basketball doubleheaders during late fall and the winter months. So keep your eye on that. And secondly, this will be the last year that ESPN does the college football playoffs under the current format. Next year it goes to a 12-team format. So it'll be very interesting to see how the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and other conferences dominate that situation and how they use the existing bowl structure. Maybe, just maybe, given all the financial concerns ESPN and Disney has, maybe it's time for them to stop, to take out the minor bowl games and stop running them, because these games have been, they do not get viewership. They're played at half-empty stadiums. Maybe we'll finally get rid of the whole idea of 5-7 teams and 6-6 teams being rewarded for a season where they perform either broke, either did bad, to be rewarded with a bowl game. Maybe the NCAA will come to its senses and tell people, hey, you have to win 8 games in order to be bowl eligible rather than 6. And incidentally, Ian Fitzsimmons also announced today, he declared, it's maybe time the NCAA have an overall commissioner of sports, which they do not write right now. Before you go, Rick, any thoughts about the Women's World Cup? Have you had a chance to see the games? What do you think about the coverage and about what took place on Sunday with the U.S. team?
I didn't really get to see much of the game just because it was on so early. I watched the previous game for a while. I think it came on at 3 in the morning here. So mm-hmm. I watched it until you know, a little after 4:30, and then I was like, I can't hang anymore. So for me, I think that messed it up a bit. I mean, the last game, during a, I think I checked in around 6 in the morning. I happened to wake up and watch it for a little bit, and it was still 0-0. And I just said, well, maybe this isn't their year the way I saw it. It looks like they're going to have a coaching change. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, a couple of impressions early on about what's happened. First of all, I think Fox and Telemundo have done a great job covering the games. Their play-by-play and commentator crews have been terrific. I think J.P. Della Camera and Ali Wagner made a very good team on the Fox coverage in English of the U.S. team. John Strong is really becoming a fast-rising play-by-play person for soccer. They have a female play by at least one female play by papers, which is great. On Telemundo's side, Anna Jerka continues to be the fast rising Spanish language sports host star, along with Miguel Gerwitz and some of the other people on the team. Andres Cantor, absolutely terrific play by play. I really like Natalie, who is their lead play by commentator person with Andres on his games. I also like Daniela Lopez. She's excellent with the Spanish language coverage. I think the coverage of the game has been terrific. I do have one criticism. I also like Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas and Carly Lloyd and the woman from Germany at the anchor desk. They're terrific. One problem, Telemundo's pregame show is a half hour. Fox is an hour. Telemundo should be an hour because they have far too many commercials and far too many commercials in the breaks in that half hour. And it really hurts the coverage because they don't have a chance to go as in-depth as the Fox coverage does. I am very concerned about the viewership coming off the USA-Sweden loss. By the way, I thought the USA played their best game. The game itself, they played their best game, finally, of the four games that they played. The Swedish goalkeeper, absolutely sensational, star of the game. And this was a great example of why penalty kicks must be disallowed. The FIFA and Major League Soccer have got to stop determining games by penalty kicks and by extra time. Here's what you do. You do overtime, sudden victory, first team scores, wins, that's it. No extra time. No, you have to play 30 minutes, two halves, 50-minute halves, no penalty kicks. Penalty kicks, you know, Rick, is like determining the seventh game of the World Series with a home run derby or the Super Bowl with a punt, pass, and kick competition or the seventh game of the NBA Finals with a foul shooting contest. It leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. And the USA, personal opinion, I thought had the worst penalty kick performance I have ever seen any U.S. team, men or women's, play. How you can be in position to win that game on penalty kicks and then screw up three penalty kicks in a row, all at the same angle, one hit the post, is beyond me. Just amazing. And it's too bad because, as I said, they played a great game. They played the best game of the four games that they played. And but Sweden won the kicks, and FIFA and Major League Soccer have got to stop this. This is absolute madness. This is not a way to determine a game, and it's certainly not a championship. And we have seen Men's World Cup last year determined by penalty kicks. Major League Soccer, MLS Cup, determined by penalty kicks. FIFA's got to learn, and all the other soccer leagues too. It's got to stop because I think this is what really hurts. And one other thing too, do you understand offsides in soccer, Rick?
I used to ref hockey, so I understand it in hockey. And in soccer, it's a little confusing, to be honest, sometimes. I mean, to some extent, I understand it, but in some other way, sometimes it gets a little confusing. Yeah, because even the players seem kind of confused sometimes.
It's like nobody understands. There's no explanation on either Fox or Telemundo what offsides is. It seems to be more of a judgment call. I've seen so many games where goals have been taken away, and then the referee calls offside, and then replay shows it wasn't offside. What? It's like nobody seems to know what the heck it is, and it's not consistent. It's like so much judgmental. Alex Morgan had a goal in the Netherlands game that would have put the USA ahead 2-1. And what happened? Offside call, which wasn't turned over on replay. Australia's game against Canada, which they won 4-0. Two goals, the first two goals, were almost taken away on replay. And one was, and another one was. And then it was replay, reversed the call. So the referees call these offside calls way too judgmental, and somebody has got to explain what offsides is that we can all understand because it has screwed up this game. That's another reason why I think why soccer is not getting the audience it really should get.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, as an American, it gets boring and frustrating a lot of times. And to be honest, that's a lot of why I stopped watching baseball for most of the season, because you just see so many plays where the umps are wrong, whether it's balls and strikes or just plays to first base even, where some games it was like almost consistently wrong. And now they have replays, but before without the replays, then you'd see the replay on TV. It was just so frustrating that nobody wants to watch TV and be frustrated constantly. I mean, if it's fair, great. If a team loses fair and square, great. But I don't know, like you're saying, and the penalty kicks, I really hate it. They need to find some other way to do that.
Duck Northwest Media, our wonderful super fan on our chat room, just came in, gave us a wonderful yellow thumbs up. Thank you, Duck Northwest Media. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room in our many minutes, or make that call, as Rick did, 646-652-2906. Rick Webb, it is always a pleasure to have you inquire to our guests or talk to me on this program. It is always a pleasure. Thank you for your wonderful support of Tamavi Televised over the years. It is super appreciated.
And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak to such high-value guests. So thank you again. Love the show, and I'll continue to listen and call in. So thanks again. Congratulations on 17 years, Simon.
Thank you so much, Rick. I deeply appreciate it and deeply appreciate you and your participation, because it's people like you that make it happen, that get us into 17 years in such great shape. Rick, all the greatest. Take care. Have a super week.
You too, Simon. Thank you.
Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, joining us on our anniversary edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So where does TV go from here, and where do we go from here? Well, about TV, a couple things. Number one, when and if these strikes get settled, anyone who is saying the era of plentiful TV is over, you have another guest coming. You're going to see a lot of scripted TV deals and a lot of scripted shows get back into production or get into production. Two, we are in the era of interactive television. It is happening. We're seeing interactive ads. We're seeing games now go up more on the TV set where you don't need a console. Artificial intelligence, where you can use your voice, your body language, and so forth, I think is a huge deal. I think you see more games on TV, and you don't need a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox to do it. We are going to get into the era of interactive commerce, where you can order products and services on the TV set. Get ready to have more channels coming on smart TV sets, device and multi-channel bundles. And also, I'd be very interested to see if we are going to have the era of the free TV set itself begin, where Kelly, which we've been covering for quite a while, if they can get those 500,000 sets into people's hands by the end of the year for free and really become the TV version of the iPhone, where more and more services are added on, that would be fantastic. And we will keep in touch on all of that, and I'm sure there will be along the next 12 months stories we haven't even thought of yet that will be. And when it comes to our show, we're going to keep on keeping on to bring you the best guests we can. We are looking forward to possibly advertise support coming up very, very soon. And we want to thank all the podcast sites that have joined us, particularly over the last few weeks. We're now on over 35. We're still talking to others about getting involved. And finally, we thank all of you. You make our show happen. And without you, there's no show. There's no anniversary. With you, we'll just keep on going and serving you the best way we can. Again, thank you to Brad Schwartz, the president of the seat of the Wisdom, our first hour. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember, if you came in late on today's show, want to catch up on episodes you missed along the way, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and go to our podcast sites, as well as our website from On Podium, tomorrowwillbetelevised.com. Love to hear from you. What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? What do you think about our guest today, Brad Schwartz, our other subjects we have, like the writers and actors strike? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter or X and LinkedIn too. However you respond, I respond back to you in 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. Nasser is a Blog Talk Radio Services program. Andy Toe is BTR's General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's Great Podcast Outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening over the last 16 years and ongoingly. And have a great week ahead. We'll be back on Thursday, second of our three shows this week, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and website destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and the next time we hear you, please make life safe and great for you and others you love. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.